That's right. We are back with episode 519 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, obscure acerbic teaser, heartfelt support for distraught colleague.
Yes, and after that, I suggest a full frontal assault with automated laser monkeys, scalpel mines, and acid.
Excellent.
No? Okay. Well, it's just the two of us for right now, though I do expect that we are going to be joined in progress by our compatriots as time marches on. But we are going to be jumping into a slew of news. That's right. A lot of the genre news was apparently waiting till after the holidays. We're going to get into that. And then while we do have a limited slate of material to go over, there are some big guns that we need to go over here. So before we go any further than that, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give a disclaimer?
Certainly. We will talk about just about anything that might have happened in the news and especially on these shows. So we must warn you that you will be horribly spoiled. But with some of this stuff, you really should have caught up by now, because we've given you at least a week.
Yes, at least a week, right? All right, well, we are going to be starting off here with some news, and like I said, we have quite a bit of it, and it's actually good because then it gives us a little more time to wait for our friends. Edmund, why don't you take the first one, if you don't mind?
Certainly. We have news about the live-action Ghost in the Shell adaptation that's going on. Scarlett Johansson has been signed to take on the lead role. I'm realizing as I scroll through this here, they, of course, are not... Actually naming her, which I'm finding intriguing, because naturally, since it was set in Japan and Scarlett Johansson is not Japanese, whether they are keeping the nationality and country, or if they're going to be shifting it around to something more Western. But regardless, certainly given her work on Black Widow and what she just did this summer in Lucy, sort of showing everybody, if they doubted it, that she could lead an action hero movie. I'm pretty happy with this casting.
Yeah, I do have concerns about this one, only because, while I do occasionally take issue with the concept or the claims of whitewashing by some folks out there on Tumblr especially, in this case, it does somewhat feel justified. And then there's the part of me that's slightly more cynical that says maybe she was cast because the Major's anatomy, full frontal anyway, is rather substantial, and so is Scarlett Johansson. So were they going more for the look than the acting, perhaps? But as I recall, the Major was kind of I think I'm getting that right. I'm trying to remember back.
Yes,
but
yes.
I do believe that she was fairly unemotional anyway. So,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, she was an android, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do see here she is a member of a covert ops unit of the Japanese National Public Safety Commission. So, yes, they are apparently in Japan. So, how they're going to deal with the race issue, we will have to wait and see.
Hey, you can never tell when it comes to anime.
Yes.
Although in this case, it was fairly obvious, but what are you going to do? All right, so in this wait. Did I hear the dulcet tones of somebody joining us?
It's entirely possible. Don't know how dulcet.
Yeah, it was certainly the little noise that Google Hangout makes whenever somebody joins us. Welcome, Bronze Thumb.
Howdy, howdy.
We just kind of got started, so we only did one of the news articles, so I'll be taking the next one, and then just so that you have advance warning to take the one after that. Okay. And was that... someone else? Yes, I believe that sound of somebody getting attacked by a laser monkey was Mr. Gary showing up as well.
Well, I'd rather be attacked by a laser monkey than accused of being dulcet, so great.
Oh, your time will come. Don't worry. Prince Galahad will ensure it. All right. Well, in this particular... Now that we have everybody here, this particular article is about Doctor Who Series 8. Now, there has been some controversy across the pond, apparently, about the ratings for Doctor Who. There were many who were claiming that, oh, is this the end of Doctor Who or the decline because of the ratings situation? Well, it sounds like over here on this side of the pond, we took care of that little problem because Series 8 was the highest rated season of Doctor Who since the series made its jump to BBC America. And so, that was back in Series 5. And it delivered 2.035 million viewers in Live Plus 3, which for BBC America is actually pretty good. So the Christmas special actually brought in 2.3 plus million viewers. So,
John, I just want to interrupt for a second. I'm still trying to learn some of the vernacular of new rating systems, and while I'm grateful they exist, live plus three means somebody has recorded it but watched it within 3 days of the original airing?
That would be correct.
Okay.
We didn't even rehearse that, folks. Really, that was spontaneous. Anyway, so yeah, it sounds like it's doing perfectly fine over here in America. So maybe the dynamics are shifting slightly, but the demise of the modern era is greatly exaggerated. Ronstone, if you don't mind.
Alrighty then. Some more casting news has come out about the Constantine television series. Mark Margolis, who fans of Breaking Bad will remember very fondly, for the fateful ding ding ding.
Yes.
However, he's been in a lot of stuff. He's one of those actors that once you see him and put a name to the face, you'll realize how often you've seen him. He's been cast as the villain Felix Faust in an upcoming episode of NBC's Constantine. Most recently, the actors appeared in American Horror Story and in Darren Aronofsky's film Noah. Apparently the casting was reported a little while ago, but it was unsure whether or not it would stick, because apparently someone else was cast as a villain from the comic books, but then had to be dropped after Constantine's first season order was capped at 13. According to the description in the article we're reading, which is from comicbook.com, Felix Faust is a powerful mystic who's menaced the DC universe for decades and was an early and dangerous Justice League villain. I really know nothing about Constantine in the comics, but just this is a really good casting because this is a really good actor, so I'm very happy.
Gary, any thoughts on this at all?
Oh, well, I'm glad they're using this villain in this case, as the article that Bronstrom quotes. Yes, Felix Faust has been a Justice League villain back into the 60s, and it always struck me as sort of odd pitting him against, say, Superman or Green Lantern. But in the Constantine universe, especially the way they're presenting it on the TV, I think it's going to be a great match as far as characterizations go. You know, he's a human being who has made, you know, Faustian agreements with demons, as well as, says his spells out loud sometimes, makes the funny finger movements, sort of in line with what Constantine does sometimes when he's got to recite spells as well. So I like it well. I'm hoping they don't necessarily make him a recurring villain type. I enjoy the different things we're getting each week out of Constantine, and I'd hate to see him get a regular villain. But I'm looking forward to it, and yeah, the casting was a little bit of an extra cherry on top as well.
All right. Yeah, I don't know much about him, so I'll be interested to see how this plays out. Again, we have these casting announcements being made. We have conflicting information about the survival of the series, but yeah, it's really odd seeing how this plays out. Edmund, if you don't mind taking the next one, a little bit of movie news.
Certainly. 20th Century Fox. Actually, I'm not even sure if they're still calling themselves that, but Fox has confirmed the latest X-Men spinoff, the Gambit film, with Channing Tatum taking the title role, is going to be released on October 7th, 2016, and means next year we're going to have basically X-Men coming out throughout the year. We've got Deadpool set up for February, X-Men Apocalypse following in May, and then Gambit in the fall. And then even the next Wolverine movie will be coming out just a little bit after that in March of 2017. So
that's like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. By then, Hugh Jackman could do Old Man Logan without even having to act.
Yes.
Yeah,
but anyhow. Anyway.
Yeah, and John, I can't believe you're cutting me off. Apparently 2016 will also see the release of the Assassin's Creed film. So.
Yes, it will. Yes. what's amazing to me is that there are already people that are worried about what the film is going to be about, when literally the only thing that we know about it is who's starring in it and when it's coming out. But I would think Michael Fassbender would be a rather good choice, since he is super enthused to play whatever role is going to be in the film. But we'll see as more comes along. Believe me, I'm sure we'll be talking about it.
I have no doubt, yes.
Yes. The Brotherhood demands it. Anyway, talking about things that are finding a completely unexpected fate, perhaps, and mm-hmm. perhaps it shouldn't be. Amazon, as it is prepping, or was prepping, to announce its latest slew of pilots to be reviewed by the public, kind of snuck out this information about Chris Carter's The After. Some may remember that a couple of years ago, this pilot was put on the service for evaluation and was quickly picked up for a full series Well, not so much anymore. They have canceled the series order, and they have absolutely no reason for it. However, my suspicion is that despite the positive response to the pilot, they actually went back and watched it. And that was all it took. As some might remember, I was not at all favorable towards it.
Yes.
It was Chris Carter trying a little too hard to go for the mature rating, let's put it that way. Oh boy. Gary, I have to give you this one because you need the opportunity to say your farewells.
Oh geez. I appreciate all the well wishes from both my fellow crew here on the podcast as well as others throughout the internet, mourning the loss of perhaps one of the best shows ever to air. USA Networks has announced that after 5 seasons, Covert Affairs will be going off the air.
I'm toasting with my drink right now. Goodbye, Annie.
Yes. Anyway, you know, Annie's secret agent days are over. We're a little disappointed because the show did end on several different small cliffhangers. But due to rising costs, and honestly, I have to say I saw this happen. Those days of a green screen of the first one or two seasons fell by the wayside, and they had done so much on-location shooting for all the various places that they've sent to Annie over the last 2 to 2.5 seasons that it doesn't surprise me that the budget was starting to become a little bit of a breaker, regardless of the shortcuts that they had taken with this series to try and make that happen and try and stay as realistic as possible. They had done away with most of the traditional crew shootings, and they'd gone to shoot on site at most of the locations that you saw them go to, you know, Budapest and the like. But they were, you know, doing almost hand cam work for a lot of this stuff. And while it wasn't the jittery hand cam that you are used to, it was still basically what was happening. They weren't using big cameras on little railways or anything like that. They were out in the streets shooting, and they thought they had trimmed the budget enough, but obviously enough. Now, I do find it interesting that their season episodes averaged over $3.5 million per episode. So I this was not a show that was not being watched by any stretch of the imagination. And as we mentioned in an earlier news piece, you know, Doctor Who was considered to do very well at 3.2 million. So this is getting, you know, an extra 100,000 viewers, and it's on the chopping block. So, I think there were other issues, including budget, that might have had to do with this. So, we'll regret it. They're, you know, they left a lot of hanging plot lines, such as Annie possibly getting married, Arthur's run for the Senate, Joan taking over a different position in the CIA, Augie leaving the CIA. There are many out there that are clamoring for at least a 2-hour movie to wrap things up. I honestly don't expect it. Perhaps I'd be happy with even the producers just saying what they hoped would happen. That would be a nice way to wrap it up for me. Of course, you know, an extra 6 episodes would be nice, but I don't see it happening. USA has been restructuring their whole network, ironically enough, to do dramas. So it still is odd that they're pulling this one, but maybe it's one of those sort of 5-year itch things that we've commented about on other series, where between production costs going up and studios have the channels having to pick up more and more of the costs, that 5 years is about the sweet spot unless it's a runaway success.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but I mean, we know that USA is part of the same conglomerate as Sci-Fi, and what we have seen surprisingly of late is an increased amount of money being thrown at Sci-Fi, and I have a feeling that USA was not making as much money as it used to, and that it's undergoing a bit of a structural and managerial change on its own. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of a clearing of the decks taking place, because a lot of the long-running shows are now gone. You know, White Collar, I think, was the only other one that was over a season or two that's still sticking around. So we'll see what happens for USA, but I will say that there's a couple things of interest coming up, but certainly not another show along the lines of Covert Affairs.
Yeah, and actually, just to clarify, White Collar did just finish its series, but they actually did know it ahead of time, so they actually got to do a finale episode.
Well, at least they got that.
Yep.
Bronstone, if you don't mind taking the next one. And actually, there's a lot of information in this one. Did we lose Bronstone, or is he still there? What's going on?
I believe he's indisposed at the moment, sir.
Ah, well, that's okay. Then I will take this one in his stead as soon as it pops up. Basically, this is about those Amazon pilots that I was talking about. in terms of some of the offerings that they're going to have out there. I'm just going to run through some of these. On the 15th of January, they're going to debut the first batch of 2015 pilots. And I think what it says here is that we have 4 dramas, 2 comedies, and then a whole bunch of kids shows that they're also putting out there. So the first one here is called Cocked. And it's,
that's not a kid show, is it, John?
No, it is not.
Okay, thank you.
It stars Sam Trammell from True Blood as Richard Paxton, or Paxton, a family man and corporate lapdog who, well, just putting that right out there, who left his family in rural Colorado 20 years before and vowed never to go back. After some unfortunate circumstances, he is forced to leave the big city and return home to help his family's gun business. Okay, well, there you go. It also stars Jason Lee, Brian Dennehy,
Brian Dennehy's still alive?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought he was dead.
Either that or this is going to be a very stiff performance from him. Let's see. The next show here in line is called Down Dog. Blessed with good looks, a winning smile, hippie parents, and a Southern California upbringing, life has been relatively easy thus far for Logan Wood, who apparently is played by Joss Kosaban, who was in a show called I Just Want My Pants Back.
That was a real show.
Yeah, I bet it was. In his late 30s, having coasted through romances with countless women in various random jobs, he now teaches yoga to the trophy wives, hot moms, and aspiring celebrities of Santa Monica and Venice Beach. This will also be starring Paget Brewster, Lindsay Fonseca. Well, I know I'll be watching this now. A few others.
I read through this description of this show, and I kept waiting for them to actually tell me what the dramatic premise is. And it's not really there. There's a music video here, but there's not a TV show.
I'm assuming quirkiness happens at the yoga studio.
Yes, it's yoga pants a go-go.
There's not an idea for a TV show.
It'll still do great. Anyway,
yoga pants, a great yoga pants.
That's
style.
What I said. It's yoga pants a go-go. Yeah. The next show here is Mad Dogs. This one is an hour-long dark comedy. From the people who brought The Shield and Last Resort. Based on a hit UK series, so here we go, remake bill. Mm-hmm. Mad Dogs follows the twisted reunion of a group of underachieving 40-something friends. Okay. So this will have in it Steve Zahn, Billy Zane, Michael Imperioli. So, I don't know. That doesn't really...
I like the cast, but it sounds like they're trying to go for a crossover between The Big Chill and Straw Dogs.
Yeah,
or worse, the Hangover, and
yeah. No, well, having seen the original UK series, it's definitely going to be more the straw dogs element if they stay true to that. Wow. And if it hangs around, the UK version was pretty good for the first 2 series, and then went completely off the rails in the third. So if they could pull a Being Human and just if it takes off and continues, you know, they should feel free to go off in their own direction.
Now, this looks like it's going to be a bit more promising. The Man in the High Castle.
Yes.
Based on Philip K. Dick's Hugo Award-winning 1962 alternative history, The Man in the High Castle considers the question of what would have happened if the Allied powers had lost World War II. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say much more than that, other than to then go to the cast. Alexa DeVallos, who was Gwen Raden on Angel, among other things. Rupert Evans. We have... let's see, Rufus Sewell, we all know him, DJ Qualls from Supernatural, the pilot directed by David Simmel, written by Frank Spotnitz of The X-Files, both will be executive producers, Ridley Scott, David Zucker, I could keep going, but those are big enough names, and the premise, of course, is about as tried and true as you can get. So I'll be interested to see if this pilot actually hits the right notes or not. Has any of you read that book?
I read that book probably 20 years ago. Jeez,
I was going to say when you had your stack of relatively thin Philip K. Dick paperbacks, yes, that they issued back in the day that were very colorful and attracted the eye of sci-fi readers everywhere.
Oh yeah.
Well, if the Allies lost World War II is a huge literary trope to hit on, and I went through a stretch where I probably read somewhere on the order of about 15 to 20 of them. So it is interesting the different ways it goes, and I always find odd the ones that end up getting us to about the same civilization point. Anyway, but Yeah, no, it's alternate history is, I think, something that has not been explored that much besides as an actual time travel venture. So it'll be interesting to, you know, see something like this. I wish they would explore that genre a little bit more without being sort of like, as I said, a time travel reset, which this doesn't strike me as it being. So that's good.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I had a similar experience to Gary, but certainly in terms of reading a ton of Philip K. Dick. Funny thing is, in my case, I mean, you're mentioning those covers, which I do know, Joe, but I was actually going through the everything that was in my public library at the time, and they all and what was really funny was they had everything bound in all these like plain black leather bindings.
Oh, really?
Yes. But it was just basically I just started at one end of the shelf and worked my way through to the end of everything they had. But one thing with Man in the High Castle is unlike some of his other much more mind-bendy tales. I mean, this one is certainly has the mind-bending premise. But if anything, it's probably one of the books that seems easiest to adapt because it is
straightforward comparatively. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, so the last big drama here, I mean, there's some comedies and kid shows I'm not going to get into, but the other one here is Point of Honor. At the start of the Civil War, a Virginia family led by their West Point-bred son, John Rhodes, makes the controversial decision to defend the South while freeing all of their slaves. At battle against his northern brethren and his best friend and brother-in-law, Robert Sumner, John leaves his three strong-willed sisters at home to run the plantation that is now without a free labor source. Well, that's one way of putting it. Yeah, so this is going to be shot entirely on location in historic Virginia. It's got some names that I don't recognize here, but this is one of interest, I'm sure, to some people. The pilot is directed by Randall Wallace of Braveheart fame and written by Carlton Cuse and Wallace together. So some may know who Carlton Cuse is.
From is it that thing is the premise sounds very have your cake and eat it too.
The premise sounds very... Lifetimey?
Yes.
Yes.
Pretty much that as well.
Especially when you look at the casting. But anyway. So yeah, lots of things that are going to be in Amazon's pilot slate. Again, on the 15th, so not very long after this goes out. By the end of the week, you should be able to see these if you so desire.
And just in general, I'm glad they are pursuing that the kids area as well. As we've seen Netflix and other people come out, it's almost been solely adult orientated. It's interesting that they are going into that that different area to get viewers.
Very true. And Gary, in fact, if you want to talk a little bit about how Netflix is going to be responding to Amazon a little bit in this next article.
Yes, yeah. I actually read a little bit about this, and it goes back, I think, into some of what we were talking about the last few episodes as well. Netflix has announced how they're going to dole out their new series for this coming year. We're starting off in January with both The Fall, starring Gillian Anderson, as well as The Adventures of Puss in Boots, which is another kid series from DreamWorks. February 27th, we'll see House of Cards coming back, and as well as the new show, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, put together by Tina Fey and Robert Carlock that did 30 Rock together. So it was originally going to be an NBC series, but now I guess they passed on it and Netflix is picking it up. March 20th, we'll see the show Bloodline starting with Sam Shepard and Sissy Spacek. Wow, that's a lot of star power there. As we mentioned a few episodes ago, they still are going forward with the Daredevil series, where Matt Murdock is in New York City. We had talked about the Jessica Jones series starting off, but that now has been postponed for one full year after the Daredevil release. So that's sort of odd with them trying to gear up for the eventual Defender series that's supposed to happen. So as they are coming out with the Iron Fist and Luke Cage series, at one-year intervals, we won't see Defenders until, what, about 2019 or 18? So that's really stretching things out. But
yeah, it's roughly concurrent, I believe, with the Phase 3 planning that they have, but it does seem like it's somewhat spread out. But that may be budgetary. I mean, this can't be cheap.
Oh, no, I agree, but although, as I said, it's just odd to plan out to 2019 with series that haven't aired yet. it almost seems like they're banking a little stronger on that. And while I hope they're all good, it's a little hard to guarantee, I think, this far out, but we'll
see.
That's
true.
Anyway, they do have some old favorites coming back, like Orange is the New Black. Season 3 will be starting this summer from Netflix as well. And the drama Sense8, being produced by J. Michael Straczynski, will also be out later in after the summer. It's produced by the Wachowski brothers, who most famously did the Matrix series. And it's about 8 characters in different cities that are all connected by a simultaneous vision that they get about a violent event happening. So,
yes, the return of J. Michael Straczynski to quote-unquote TV. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are quite a few of us that are interested in how that's going to pan out.
There's two particular shows. Like, just looking at the list of shows, there's two of them that jump out at me. The Tina Fey and Robert Carlock one reads like Martha Macy May Marlene as a sitcom, which is just breaking my brain a little bit, in kind of a good way. And then there's one Grace and Frankie, which sounds like it should be. It sounds like it's going to be the Vicious of American TV. Have any of you guys watched the show Vicious?
No, I've heard of it, but haven't caught it.
Okay, it's a very like, you know, low budget cheesy British sitcom that started like a year or two back, about just like a really vicious old like elderly gay couple. And the reason that it works really well is that it's Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Derek Jacobi playing the main characters.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
And it shouldn't work, but it's brilliant. And this one here, it's Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin in a sitcom as people who don't like each other. That's a lot more of a premise than that bloody Amazon one, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah, and certainly given all the comedy and dramatic chops Jane Fonda was showing off in the newsroom, it'll be a lot of fun to see to have her be in a show where we see more of that.
Hmm.
Speaking of unusual casting, perhaps, Edmund, if you don't mind taking the next one.
Certainly. American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, has cast its star, and it means we can welcome back John Travolta to TV, since, of course, it's his first show since Welcome Back, Kotter, so all of the announcements have had to play on that quite a bit. But Travolta will be starring as defense attorney Robert Shapiro, for those of us who remember or maybe wish to forget the O.J. hysteria, he will be leading what is actually a pretty good cast, as American Horror Story does tend to do. We've got David Schwimmer as Robert Kardashian, Cuba Gooding Jr. as O.J. Simpson, and of course Sarah Paulson as Marcia Clark. I was trying to see here.
Photo at the top of the article.
Yeah.
I thought they got a photo from Madame Tussaud.
I was just trying to remember exactly when it's coming out, but they're not reminding me here. But it is the American Horror Story miniseries format, so 10 episodes for those of us who wish to relive the O.J. Simpson trial.
I'm just trying to think of anyone who actually does want to relive that. I guess we'll find out when the ratings come out for this show.
Exactly.
I didn't really look through it in the first place, so.
Well, I remember watching the low speed chase, and that was enough for me.
Well, Bronstom, if you don't mind standing at attention and taking the next article.
I'm racking my brain for some good Spartacus-esque dialogue, but I'm coming up blank. But yes, Liam McIntyre, who we all remember very fondly from the second and third series of Spartacus, has been cast as the villain Weather Wizard in a couple of upcoming episodes of The Flash.
Now, I thought all Spartacus actors had to go to Arrow. This seems a bit of a shared news,
so it's okay.
They ran out of the immediately available Prison Break and Tomorrow People cast members, so they had to go to the tried and true of Spartacus.
Is this another one of those things where like one show becomes the afterlife for another show? Like everyone who died on Breaking Bad turned up in Community at some point. So, and there was another one like that. But yeah. So Liam McIntyre will be playing the Weather Wizard in the 14th and in the 15th and 16th episodes of the first season. I was not necessarily aware of this because I'm not up on Flash comic book whatnots, but apparently the Weather Wizard's brother was the villain in the pilot episode. Mark Martin is the Weather Wizard's real name, and his brother Clyde was the guy who was controlling weather in that first episode. So it looks like the Weather Wizard's intro is going to have him rocking up to, I almost said Starling City, rocking up to Central City looking for revenge on the Flash. So, as motivations go for dropping a new villain into things and giving them a reason to dislike the hero, it's not a bad one.
Hmm. Well, I mean, to continue, I guess, with the casting here, I mean, we've gone from John Travolta, maybe trying to reinvigorate his career again, onto, you know, Spartacus, you know, Liam McIntyre himself, and now I think it's time to go even further into gravitas to Captain Adama himself, Admiral Adama, later on, Edward James Olmos, who is going to be guest starring on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., playing the character of Robert Gonzalez, who does not ring a bell by the way, which makes me wonder who he's going to actually be, or if it's an amalgam of characters, as some others have turned out to be. But they don't say how long he's going to be around, but they do know that it's going to be one of those characters that comes in and shakes things up.
Brace yourself. So say we all posts are coming.
They are.
Oh boy.
You'll notice that I restrained myself from doing that. But at any rate, just to round out our many announcements about shows coming back and so forth, HBO does not want to be left out. This one, however, I'm sure is something everyone's been wondering. Edmund, why don't you take this last one?
Certainly. HBO has announced that Game of Thrones will be returning for its 10-episode fifth season on Sunday, April 12th. So set your DVRs accordingly. It will be followed. They're making April 12th the big rollout day because Silicon Valley and Veep will also be debuting back-to-back following Game of Thrones. And I'm just seeing here, yeah, and interestingly, they are actually going Silicon Valley first in the hour and Veep second, which maybe a little bit unusual, with Veep kind of being the more tried and true and successful and award winning show. But certainly I did very much enjoy Silicon Valley's first season, so I'm happy to see it coming back.
Okay, well, we don't have a huge amount of time left in this particular show, but I don't want to necessarily get into our episodic discussion here. Instead, I'm going to take a little bit of an odd turn because, Gary, I'm assuming you did not get the chance to watch Interstellar yet because, you know, it has been a busy week.
No, sir, I have not.
We will give you more time. Don't worry. Instead, there was another show that kind of came out of nowhere that is not the usual fare that we talk about, but I thought that it would be worthy of us to discuss because I'm fairly sure we all, on some level, enjoyed this. And that would be a little musical comedy called Gallivant. I talked about it before, but who here in the group kind of had the opportunity to watch that?
Me, I thought.
I did.
Oh, Brian, you would love it. Please, go.
Oh, yes.
It sounds like something I would enjoy, but I just haven't gotten around to that one yet.
It gives me a sense of, what was that Harry Potter thing they did?
Harry Potter musical?
Yeah, not exactly, but in the same family kind of thing.
Okay.
It's also vaguely reminiscent of like a Dr. Horrible, in certain sense. The style of the lyrics, the kind of darkness of it, even though it's very very funny and lighthearted, there's some really crazy things that go on, and it surprised me. Edmund, you mentioned that you saw it too. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, I think this is one of those classic cases of where they kind of hit scheduling gold because debuting it kind of in the midst of this little holiday hiatus where there wasn't really much else on. So especially on the usually ever packed Sunday nights there've been a whole bunch of other shows going on, you know, being shown that night. I might have given it a miss, but I was very happy that I did tune in because I was not expecting it to be as gloriously over the top as it was, and just one of those cases of taking this slightly silly premise, but just really running with it, and I think the Dr. Horrible, the sort of meta aspects of it, they were really playing to the hilt, and I was very pleasantly surprised with how much fun it was.
Yeah, I mean, just I remember that there have been other shows that have tried to do this kind of musical thing. There was that one with Hugh Jackman a couple years ago that was a complete and utter disaster. And so I was really worried that I was like, oh, okay, so basically they've got this mid-season thing that's only going to be like 6 or 8 episodes long, and it looks cheesy as hell. And sure enough, it was. But they owned it. I mean, they camped it up to the hilt. One of the characters, the King, I guess it's King Richard.
Yes.
Yes.
The guy who played the detective, the lead detective in Psych. And he's about as perfect as one could hope for in the role. And, yeah, I'm looking for a soundtrack at the end of all this.
I know, really I was hope. Humming the song the next morning, so yeah. But they beat you over the head with it at the same time.
Oh, I'm looking forward to some of the other songs, you know, particularly the one about how, the many different ways that he wants to kill Gallivant. and then, you know, it's full of nice little trope reversals, and the jousting scene alone was just, I could not stop just laughing out loud throughout the entire thing.
Yes, Bronstein, the second episode was called Joust Friends. Just to give you an air of the... Yeah.
Okay, I'm sold. I'll watch it.
They do not in any way take themselves seriously. They play it to the hilt. And then some. So yes, I would definitely say, please, anyone who's, you know, was in any way on the fence about seeing this, please give it a try. It's not got a long run, and I'm hoping that they don't try to go... this is actually one of those situations where, as much as I enjoy it, I almost hope they don't try to throw another season in. This seems like something that really just do a really good job of it and let it stand.
Get in and out quick. Is it,
yeah. Exactly. Because and it could quickly overstay its welcome. So.
And while there are, it's packed full of innuendos, thankfully, I'd assume this was a family-friendly show. The innuendos fly fast and furious and thankfully over most of my kids' head for the most part.
Yes, the jester is a very lucky man. That's all I'll say.
You're not kidding.
Mm-hmm. And how. Well, let's see. Any other thoughts on that or anything that wasn't on our list here?
Yeah, well, I mean, you just referred to it a little bit, but certainly of all the reversals, having the true love kind of decide she likes being powerful and rich was definitely the opening highlight.
Yes. Yeah, the end of the very first episode's introduction is just the first complete deconstruction of trope that you get, and it sets the tone very quickly. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up then, and next time we will be covering the episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.